Anderson heaving one down the sideline, and he's got Cass Allen.
Listening to the Bruin Bible. This is your host, Will Decker, bringing you UCLA football content all throughout the year for LA Football Network.
What's up, Bruin Bible listeners? This is your host, Will Decker. We are brought to you today by the good people at BetOnline. It is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports contests and events with first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, this is MMA and boxing, esports, and even golf. I'm going to be placing some big-time bets this year. NFL, we're talking about Rams-Chargers Super Bowl. That's my prediction. Going to be placing some future odds on that. MLB, I might be placing a bet on the Dodgers to make the World Series as well, given the year that they've had so far in the regular season. I'm going to be using it for all my MMA bets. Loving when a good fight's coming up. The Nate Diaz fight coming up this Saturday. Going to be putting a nice wager on that through BetOnline. Head on over to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to join today and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. What is up and welcome to another edition of the Bruin Bible. Will Decker, your host, joined by my co-host Jamal Madney in the cut. We got to preview the Colorado game this week, and you know, Jamal is going to actually be in Boulder, which I'm really excited about. We're going to probably do a post-game live show, which will probably be infused with a little bit of liquor maybe after a day game for my guy Madman going to be out there, and with the Godfather himself, Ryan Dyrud, and their lovely wives. So, Madman, how excited are you for the weekend to get out to Boulder, Colorado, one of the best college towns in America, if I do say so myself?
No question about it, Will. Really excited. A, obviously, what a great game and opportunity it is for UCLA to get to 4-0 for the first time since 2015, since Josh Rosen's freshman year. But even beyond that, as you mentioned, Colorado is arguably the most beautiful place to have a Pac-12 football game. I, you know, love the Rose Bowl. I know Washington's got a beautiful venue as well, but there's something so special and unique about Boulder, Colorado. My wife went to graduate school there, so we try and make a trip every year to visit those memories and be in that environment. So to be able to do that with the game, with Ryan and his wife, I think it's just going to be a really fun weekend and a great atmosphere.
It's going to be a lovely experience, and the only experience it's not going to be lovely for, it's been Colorado fans and our old, you know, our guy, Carl Durrell. It sucks to see him go through this. The coach of UCLA from 2003 to 2007, former player at UCLA, went 35 and 27 in his tenure for the Bruins. Kind of did his thing there, had some tough battles with the SC teams of the Pete Carroll era. So we got a lot of love for Carl Durrell, but this may very well be his last game at Colorado. This Saturday, as you know, the athletic director of Colorado came out with a statement today trying to, you know, defend the actions of keeping him in even for this game. And just to kind of riddle off how difficult of a start it's been for Colorado, opening weekend they lost 38-13 to TCU. They lost 41-10 to Air Force. And I think that's when everyone was like, oh man, they are down bad right now, as the kids like to say. And then they followed it up last weekend with a very solid Minnesota team. They got destroyed 49-7. So in the process of that, they have been outscored in about three games. I think it is 120-30. Is that correct? It is a resounding negative start for this Colorado team. Madman, how do we even prep for a game coming into this? Because it has been so tough to start just talking about the Buffaloes in any good manner.
Yeah, Will, you said it. You know, I believe it was 128-30. They've been outscored these first three games. I mean, if you think about that, that's an average of 43-10, right, is the average score. That's a really tough way to look at it. Will, you brought up something really profound earlier in that Carl Durrell, obviously 35-27 at UCLA, did his thing. People forget Carl Durrell was the coach of arguably the greatest UCLA football victory of the 21st century. He was the coach in 2006 when UCLA beat SC 13-9 and denied SC a chance at a fourth consecutive national championship game appearance. And so, you know, Durrell is a UCLA legend, played on the 85 Rose Bowl team with Rick Neuheisel. He was the receiver. Rick Neuheisel was the quarterback. So just UCLA royalty in so many ways. And I think the best way to describe the state of Colorado football right now, Will, is if we think back to that 2006 game of USC and UCLA and peak SC, as you mentioned it, the level of underdog that UCLA was in beating SC in that game is still less of an underdog than Colorado will be on Saturday against this UCLA team that is coming off a one-point victory against South Alabama. That is the best way I can describe the state of the Colorado program going into Saturday.
And it's sad. I mean, this program, you really break down the stats. They went in 2020, the COVID-shortened season, they went 4-2. That was their first winning season since 2005, Madman, when they went 7-6. Think about that. We've talked about Arizona State and them kind of being, you know, a dumpster fire right now. They've only had one losing season in a decade. Colorado, this team has not had a winning season up until the pandemic. If you even count a six-game slate, because it probably would have evened out at the end, since 2005, like, that is insanity at its finest. And you look at just the advanced stats with this team. Mind you, there are 131 Division I football teams, Madman. We've done this with the UCLA pass defense ranks, you know, in past years. They rank 127th in total offense and 119th in total defense in the country. There's a real case that this team could surpass the last few years of Arizona, which were, you know, up until that point, probably the worst Power 5 team I've ever seen. And I want to be respectful to every opponent. I want to make sure we give credit to where it's due. There's just not a lot to be spun around right now. And, you know, I'm looking in the quarterback room. Brendan Lewis, last year's quarterback, has been benched in, you know, favor of a guy named JT Shrout, I believe his name is. Mm-hmm. He's got 55 attempts. He's completing 40% of his passes. Like, it is not good right now. That is, like, the lowest mark I think I've ever seen from a starter. Deion Smith, the tailback, he's been solid. You know, he's averaging 5.7 yards a carry, 159 yards on the ground. But the lower you go, it's just – it's hard to find any bright spots. And you got to respect every opponent. But, Madman, this is tough to say the least. I don't even know where to go with this on a Colorado basis, my man.
No, Thriller, I think you said it best. And even in this circumstance, you're so great in terms of your analysis and, you know, you laying it out for our terrific audience. Two things kind of come to mind for me, Will. One is I actually think there's a little bit of a bright spot with JT Shrout, in that I think that a lot of the Colorado fan base and the audience has been clamoring for this young man to exclusively get time as QB1. And even going into the UCLA game on Saturday, there's a lot of conversation in the Colorado side of the world about there this being this quarterback battle. And for anyone that's kind of seen Colorado in spots this year, there, JT Shrout is clearly more talented than Brendan Lewis. He's got a live arm. He can get the ball down the field. In that game against TCU that you mentioned, their opener, the only time they were able to really move the ball and generate any sort of momentum in that game was with Shrout. Now, the question is, who can he throw to, right? Because 2 points make a line. I need 2 points to make a line. Otherwise, I'm in, you know, metaphysical space land. And so the question is going to be, are there some weapons that can emerge? Can they build some sort of a game plan around the tight ends, around passing it to the backs, and just being able to stay in front of the sticks and try and get this crowd involved and build a little bit of momentum? And I think the second thing, Will, that you mentioned is obviously going through the non-conference, it's been bleak. And now you sort of look at the state of the Pac-12 for Colorado, the emergence of Washington, Oregon sort of rebounding. You're seeing Washington State being a really quality team. SC's looking really good. UCLA comes in 3-0. There's a real case that they could be flirting with a potential 0-12 season. And I actually think that the sneaky game of the year in the Pac-12 will Arizona State, Colorado. both of those two teams are going to be battling for a conference victory. That might be the game of the year in the Pac-12 this year. That could be a 57-56, five overtime, you know, two-pointer wins the game kind of thing.
The most overtimes and the least amount of people watching. That's how I'm going to say that for the Arizona State-Colorado game. And, you know, it's very similar to the likes of Nebraska in a lot of ways because they're a school that built their success in the early 90s. I mean, this team, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, they've got a Heisman to their name. They've got a national championship to their name. Denver has always been a rough area to recruit outside of the unicorn that is Christian McCaffrey coming from that area. So they would have to get their talent from Southern California, Los Angeles, you know, maybe dip into Arizona, Utah, places like that where the recruiting ground is a little bit more fertile. The program has taken such a step back, and it's so sad to see because they actually hired the right guy a couple years ago in Mel Tucker. But the first chance Mel Tucker got to go to look at another school, he was out of there. He knew he had no chance to win at a place like Colorado. So it's really rough to see. I wish them nothing but the best because, man, I mean, as we started this podcast off with, like, that is one of the most beautiful college towns and, you know, a fan base that, you know, reaped a lot of the rewards in the 90s. You know, I remember the Hail Mary they did against Michigan on opening weekend. Like, this was a school.
I mean, what a great, you know, iconic flash, right? I mean, and Slash was his nickname in the NFL, right? I mean, and he was Colorado's quarterback. You had Rashan Salaam. You mentioned the Heisman winner. You know, McCartney, their coach, took them to really the highest of peaks of the sport when they won the national championship in 1990 and, you know, were really the face of college football. And I think, Will, you bring up a really interesting point because this is an example where in this world of conference realignment, sometimes you can get it wrong. And there is sort of a direct correlation between Colorado moving from the Big 12 to the Pac-12 and their level of consistency and excellence. And I think one of the things that really worked for Colorado, like you mentioned, a very difficult place to recruit, Denver, when you compare it to the Californias, when you compare it to the Arizonas and so forth. But when you had Colorado in the Big 12 and they were competing with the likes of Nebraska and Oklahoma and more of the Big 12 states, Colorado was actually a very attractive place to come and play relative to those regions. And so sometimes you can sort of play yourself out of contention with conference realignment. And I think it's a really interesting point, especially today in today's world where everyone's kind of hopping around and looking for the next best thing. Sometimes the grass isn't always greener and there's nothing fundamentally wrong with Colorado. I wish them nothing but the success. And I hope they get back to that level of excellence and being a Pac-12 South contender. But I think they got in a tough spot after they moved conferences and then didn't realize some of the unintended consequences.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a large portion of the reason, at least football-wise, why they wanted to move to the Pac-12 was, like we talked about, you know, their recruiting success came with McCartney coming to Southern California and pulling guys out of there. And they go, hey, we're playing the same conference. We'll be at USC. We'll be at UCLA. We'll be more of an area to, you know, grab these kids out and go there. Unfortunately, they had lost kind of their fastball at that point, and they didn't have the coaches that utilized the area they were in, as well as, like you were saying, Big 12 back in the 90s with the Oklahomas. People forget. I mean, Nebraska now is, you know, a far cry of what it used to be. That was a top three program in the country up until about 2005, 2006. So, I mean, Nebraska was college football in a lot of ways. Texas, Oklahoma. A lot of the TV deals were centered around Big 12 at that point too. So McCartney's big pitch coming in there was, I can get you on TV every Saturday. Your mom's going to be able to watch you play. And you're playing against the best in the country at that point. And I think a lot of people were like, yeah, sign me up for that. You know, I could go to USC, UCLA. I've got a faster chance of starting at Colorado. I get more exposure and I'm on TV every Saturday. That's a win-win for me. So, you know, it just isn't the same anymore. And what I would be looking at if I was Colorado moving to, you know, likely an area where the Pac-12 or what remains of it, it's not going to be one of the big two or three major conferences after the realignment is done. I'd be looking at the Fresno States. I'd be looking at the San Diego States going, you guys are mid-majors, but you found a way to compete at a high level, you know, get to that 9-10 win range. What are you guys doing that we are not? Because we're clearly not a power five or power two or three school when it comes to football anymore. It's just not the case. How can we be a competitive mid-major? And that is where I would be leaning towards doing that if I was Colorado Madman.
No, absolutely, Will. And it's so interesting that you mentioned. Think about this, Will, as to, you know, just how high Colorado was. There's only two schools today in the Pac-12 that had a dedicated ESPN 30 for 30 film about them. And it was USC and it was Colorado. Think about that for a second, right? Like, that's how great Colorado was and what they're capable of being at one point in time. And I couldn't agree more with you. I think that you need to find that identity, whether it's on offense or on defense. Are we going to be a running team? Are we going to be a passing team? How are we going to build our team? I think that's one of the things that was the magic of Jim Harbaugh at Stanford when he realized, look, the only guys that actually consistently can get the grades to get into Stanford where we can build any sort of a talent pipeline is the offensive line. And so I'm going to build a team around the offensive line. We're going to be run first. We're going to chew the clock. We're going to shorten the game. We're going to take the other guy's skill positions out of there. And so I think Colorado needs to find that niche. You know, is it great secondary play? Is it great linebackers? Is it great running backs? And then you start building around that competitive advantage and then build an overall strategy around it. And I think Mel Tucker could have had the potential to really start that process. Unfortunately, he then went to Michigan State. I think you need a younger guy, someone with a ton of energy who can really recruit and sell and really sort of build a program. And Carl Durrell, for all of his excellence as a man, as an individual, as someone who has made so many contributions to society, to young men, his personality is just not that rah-rah, let's build it up kind of guy. So it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out. I wish him all the best. But, you know, it really feels like with the way things have gone with Scott Frost, with the way things have now gone with Herm Edwards, that Carl Durrell seems like he's next on the chopping block unless something significant happens, i.e. some profound upset. Let's just knock on wood. It's not us on Saturday.
Definitely not us. And I think the final question I will say to the Colorado fan base and to you when it comes to the matchup against Colorado is, does Carl Durrell make it out of this game? Is this his last game if UCLA turns it up to the level where we've expected them to be, you know, all season long?
Will, I think that they're looking for a reason to keep him. You know, there's some jobs where, like Orgeron with LSU, they were just sort of looking for a reason to get rid of him. Dan Mullen at Florida, you're sort of looking for a reason. I actually think in Nebraska's case and in Colorado's case, they are looking for a reason to keep Carl Durrell for another week, for another couple of weeks, because I think they really believe, and there's a tremendous amount of alignment in terms of his value system and the value system of the university. So as long as Colorado can put up 17 points, you know, and keep it competitive for a quarter, you know, I think that he can survive it. But if they just, you know, get crushed 51-3 or just get, you know, it's just blowout city from the word go, and they just look completely incoherent on offense and defense, then, you know, chances are he doesn't make it out of this game. And the question then becomes is, does he get fired like Lane Kiffin on the tarmac? Does he get fired like Herm Edwards on the field? Is it somewhere in between in the locker room? You know, then the bets start flying about where he's going to get fired.
Yeah, I think if UCLA can be the team that it is, and I think Minnesota's a better team than UCLA is right now, and they won 49-7. If it's a similar fashion, I think, unfortunately for our guy Carl Durrell, it might just be time for him to pack up and look for, you know, another assistant coaching job, maybe another head coaching job, depending on where it's at.
What's interesting, Will, before you go on to the next point here is, it a lot of this comes down to Chip. Right. If I said that this is 2011 Chip Kelly, I would say that the probability of Carl Durrell getting fired after this game is like 99.8%. Because Chip in the Oregon days was running it up on people too. I mean, they were putting up to the 60s and the 70s. This version of Chip, the UCLA Chip, is a much more mellow guy. Yeah, I mean, he sort of consciously doesn't want to run it up on people. He's sort of very big on sportsmanship and all of that. And so as a result of that, hey, maybe the score doesn't get as bad as maybe it looks like or it feels like. And maybe that can be Carl Durrell's saving grace for at least another week.
Carl Durrell, we will find out on Saturday evening after the game the fate of our guy. And I don't want to, you know, crap on Durrell anymore. UCLA proud alum, did some great things as the head coach for UCLA. So nothing but love for our guy, Carl Durrell. Madman. So coming into this game, who do you want to see have a big impact on the game? Because I think we're both in agreement that this should be a very, very easy UCLA victory at the very least. Who in your eyes do you need to kind of see step up and make some plays for UCLA this week? Because we have a lot, we have a wide variety of areas that struggled last Saturday and have struggled for the first 3 weeks of the season. I got to see some improvements in some areas. Where are you going with this, Madman?
Will, it's two areas for me. One is, you know, I think of this as now the last game of the UCLA preseason, if you will. You know, we fully expect this to be 4-0, and then it becomes an 8-game season. You know, UCLA's first four games will never be confused with the 1927 New York Yankees lineup. You know, it's sort of the opposite of that going into this season. And so if I were Chip and saying, look, this is sort of my last tune-up game, what do I really want to see? It's in two areas. Number one, I want to see Bobo build on the last game as wide receiver one. And I actually want to see Bobo and Kaz Allen playing well at the same time, because that's going to be critical to my pass offense and my level and ability to compete with elite Pac-12 competition. And if both of those guys are playing well at the same time, that means DTR is getting the ball out to both. He's reading situations, and he, as a result, is playing really well. Charbonnet is Charbonnet. He's the man. We all know that. We don't have to worry about him. But I'm looking for those two guys to play well at the same time. And then defensively, I want to see my triumvirate of Carl Jones Jr., Darius Mouassau, and Bo Calvert, those three linebackers, really controlling this game, both from a run as well as from a pass perspective. And then I want to see the Murphy twins get back to pass rush and getting pressure on the quarterback. Those are kind of my two areas and three big takeaways, where if those three things happen, Will, I'll be very satisfied going into the game against Washington a week from Friday.
Couldn't agree more. And the defensive line was a big area of emphasis for improvement after last week. One pressure, zero sacks against South Alabama, who is a quality opponent. I don't want to, you know, crap on them too much, but you know, there was an area where we should have been more dominant, you know, when it comes to the pass rush. I got two things for you, Madman, when it comes to this game. I want to see Charbonnet just turn it up to 10 in the first half, because we've really gotten just a limited experience with our guy Charbonnet. And coming in this year, we're going Doak Walker, you know, is he going to break Skip Hicks's touchdown record? You know, we're having these conversations around a guy like Charbonnet, and you know, he has the big week one where, you know, he was still limited a little bit against Bowling Green, but 100 plus yards, sits out the second game. And, you know, last week it was, you know, one of the more disappointing games I've had as a fan of Charbonnet, because he fumbles on the goal line, kind of keeps South Alabama in the game. Other than that, he did some really great things. I think he accounted for, you know, over 130 yards of total offense when it came to the ground and that huge catch he had in the first half. But, you know, I'm ready to see it. I want the death kill from Charbonnet. We're up 24-7 in the waning minutes of the first half, and Charbonnet just rips off a 45-yard touchdown, seals the deal. You know, it may not have to be the 100-yard-plus performance, but maybe just a dominant first half, and he can rest in the second. So Charbonnet is the guy I've got circled where it's like, let him loose, man. Like, it's time for Charbonnet to kind of come out the stables. We're getting to Pac-12 play. You know, we got to have him ready and rolling by the time we hit the Washington, Utah, Oregon slate. You know, some really good teams coming up in those three. So I want to see Charbonnet kind of turn it loose. Defensively, this is a game where I think Colorado is going to be behind for most of the game, if not all of the game. They're going to be throwing the football a lot. I want to see our young corners get some ball hawk interceptions. The Devin Kirkwoods, the Jalen Davies, you know, the seniors, the Mo Osling's back there making plays, Stephen Blaylock. I want to see some ball hawks. I want to get two or three turnovers from this secondary making plays out there because we have the talent that's capable of doing that. You know, Kirkwood didn't get a pick, but he recovered two fumbles last week. He has kind of been the leader of the secondary. He's such a young guy out there that we're so excited about. Davies had that huge pick, you know, earlier this season. So, Madman, give me your thoughts. Do we get a big Charbonnet game, and do we get the secondary, you know, picking everything left and right?
Thriller, I completely agree with you in terms of your analysis. A, on the defensive side, that Colorado's going to be behind. They're going to be behind early and often. It's going to lend itself to second and long, third and long situations. There's going to be some jump balls. There's going to be some balls where either Lewis or Shroud is under pressure, and there's going to be some real opportunities to make some great plays in the secondary. Couldn't agree more with you. And then with our man Charbonnet, Thriller, he's got some work to do. If we talk about our preseason episode, we were at over under 1575. You had him at about 24 rushing touchdowns on the year. So he's at about 180 right now and one touchdown. So we got to get that rolling here. We got to get that moving. I completely agree with you. And I would love to see Charbonnet kind of get into that rhythm and flow. And I don't want to see as much kind of two back. I think I'd rather see – I don't mind seeing the split carries, but I'd love to see Charbonnet just sort of own the first half, games kind of well in hand, and then you go to Keegan Jones. I thought last week with South Alabama, it was a little bit too much fluctuation drive to drive and even sometimes play to play. And Charbonnet is one of those guys – you know, much like, you know, a Bryce Hall in the past and so forth, he gets better with more carries. The Terminator needs his touches. He needs to kind of get into a flow. So I'd love to see that as well. And I find it ironic, Will, that between the two of us on what we want to see, let's recap. We want to see Bobo and Kazmir Allen passing game. We want to see Charbonnet the running game. We want to see the defensive line. We want to see the linebackers. We want to see the secondary. So basically, we want to see everybody doing well and dominating in this game as they should against another subpar opponent. So really excited about that. Would be great to get Charbonnet back into triple figures and two touchdowns. I think in an ideal world, kind of a 13 carry, 102 yards, two touchdowns would just be absolutely delicious to kind of get ready now for that triumvirate that you mentioned earlier that's coming up.
And call a spade if there's bigger Bruin football fans out there than you and I. I'd like to know who they are because that's what we do here at the Bruin Bible. I'm going to throw in a wild card for you, too. There's a large percentage that this is a blowout game, and there's a chance that we're going to get Ethan Garbers in, you know, maybe a little earlier than possible. That is something I'm looking at because we've talked about it the second game of the season. Yes, it was Alabama State. I'm not underestimating the opponent, but the offense has looked the best when Garbers was on the field in that drive. I'm excited to see if that kind of continues over to maybe, you know, if you want to call Colorado a Power Five school right now, you can, but I want to see it carry over just a little bit, you know, with Garbers. Like, is the magic still there when he enters the game? Is the offense humming the same as it was against an Alabama, you know, State? Because I think this could be a quarterback battle that, you know, come if we get into mucky waters very soon here, it could be Garbers' show to potentially end the year. I mean, call me crazy on this. I've got a lot of love and respect for Dorian, but this is year five. I was kind of expecting a little bit of a jump here.
No, Will, I think that's a very fair statement. And I think that this is going to sort of play out in a couple of different ways. It could be that Chip plays DTR a little bit more to make sure that he's got the rhythm really ready to rock and roll. Keep one thing in mind. It's a road game. First time we're outside of the Rose Bowl in a high altitude environment. So there's going to be some adjustment there. And we're also on a short week because the following game is a Friday. So I think he's going to want Dorian and Zach to kind of get their work in, but kind of do it continuously and quickly. And then I think that at, you know, midway through the second quarter, late second quarter, beginning of the third, we go to Garbers. And I think it's going to be fascinating, Will. You alluded to it. I completely agree with you, especially that drive at the end of the half against Alabama State, the verticality in the passing game looked the best. Now, I think DTR did a nice job finding Bobo in certain spots in the last game and threw the ball down the field. But we still haven't seen that crisp drive out of DTR yet. Even these touchdown drives, you know, he makes a good throw, then it's an incomplete, or, you know, it's a play for a no gain. And we're sort of every alternate play getting there. And so I think wanting to see a smooth performance is really key. And keep another thing in mind, Will, I think the Garber's performance is going to be critical, because then we get Washington, we get Utah, we get Oregon, three consecutive ranked opponents right now based on who's in the top 25. But after Washington and Utah, there's a bye. And so if this team does get into any muddy waters, we're not expecting that, we're not hoping that, but in the event it does, there is a potential off-ramp there in that bye for Chip to potentially really look at this quarterback situation and potentially make a decision, you know, in a different direction. And so I think that's why the Garber's time, for all UCLA fans, keep an eye out on that, because it need not be relevant to this game or the next game, but that bye week is staring us, you know, in a couple of weeks. And depending on what our record is, that could be a key moment for some adjustments.
Absolutely. And if you see Madman in the streets in Boulder, Colorado, say what up to my guy. He's got an article coming out tonight on LA Football Network previewing the game, so make sure to read that. Madman, any final thoughts before your trip to Boulder, my man?
Just excited to be there, Will, and represent LAFB, and so thrilled to do a post game with you. I think we're going to have a great time. And I know a lot has been in the press and on Twitter with a lot of things that are going on with UCLA. But I think bottom line, keeping the eye on the donut, we are, you know, one performance away from being 4-0, 1-0 in the conference, and then getting ready for that conference season. Bruin fans, the season really begins next week. Let's come out. Let's pack the Rose Bowl Friday night and really show our support as we expect our Bruins to be 4-0 and 1-0 in conference against potentially a top 20 Washington team. So let's hope we're humming. Let's hope the guys get through it. Knock on wood, no injuries. Everyone's healthy. Everyone's feeling good. And we head into next week with all the momentum.
Godspeed, Bruins fans. It could be a lot worse right now. 3-0 sounds pretty good to me. Bruin Bible, we are officially out.